It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 138 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And this week we have a pretty special episode for y'all.
Way back when we recorded episode 100, which was like, I guess, almost 40 episodes ago now, we did a different format where we just answered your questions. And we enjoyed that so much, we thought we'd bring that back as a kind of regular segment for the show.
Yeah, so the questions are waiting, Tim. So let's get right to it.
All right, so we reached out to our Radio TCX patrons and asked them to ask us any questions they'd like to hear us answer on the show, whether they're X-Wing related or otherwise. And we did this exclusively for people who support us on Patreon. So if you're someone who's financially supporting the show, we wanted to give you a little extra something special here to let us know that we really do appreciate you. So all these questions are going to be coming from our Patreon page.
Yeah, and this episode and hopefully future episodes like it, I think, are going to be a good opportunity for us to answer some questions that we normally wouldn't think about asking in the first place. But I think a lot of ones that really do deserve a bit of discussion and attention on our part. And of course, there's the added bonus that they're pretty fun questions. So thank you.
Yeah, so let's jump into this here. Our first question comes from Jason Campbell. Jason asks us a two-parter question. First off, what is your most favorite thing about 2.0, and what is your least favorite thing?
Well, let me start with my least favorite part. I think that would be that munitions still exist and are very good in second edition. Just not a fan of having to worry about a large volume of four dice attacks coming at my ships that are now much more fragile. Really need some superior evade tokens to dodge those. Which my scum ships don't have, so not a fan of that. Also a bit disappointed that we didn't get an I-6 Star Viper, and I guess I'm just going to have to live with that. Maybe if I win Worlds, instead of making an upgrade card, I'll just make my own Star Viper with me as the pilot.
I think for me, it's kind of the same thing. My favorite part and my least favorite part of the game are kind of the same thing. We touched on this a little bit when I was talking to Kevin last week, but it's just that whole idea of being bad at X-Wing again, and I'm not making any claim that I'm a superstar player, but I felt like I had a pretty good understanding of the game back in first edition, and then jumping into second edition, enough has changed where I'm familiar with a lot of things, and a lot of the skills did transfer over from first edition, but I'm still caught with so many moments there where I realize, oh, I've made these little mistakes that because of mechanics that existed before or things that I'd gotten so comfortable with that are not there anymore in second edition, that I'll have those moments where like, oh man, I really got caught off guard. And I think it's both really interesting to me, because I think it's pretty fun to experience the game kind of brand new, something that you already feel like you're familiar with. And at the same time, it can be very frustrating when I'm playing at a tournament and I'm getting caught up on all these new mechanics and all these new interactions and just, you know, feeling like I did when I first started playing X-Wing so many years ago.
Right. And I mean, I think that rediscovery is my favorite part about second edition right now. You know, so many ships have been redesigned or rebalanced. And I'm just really enjoying going through the process and relearning them all individually. You know, Hawks are very different. You know, kind of in the same way, TIE Defenders are very different. You know, both those ships have gotten the boost action. And what does that mean for those ships? It impacts those ships differently, but, you know, they both open up a lot of new options. Aggressors really just kind of got rebalanced and really more changed with the upgrade cards surrounding them. So that's kind of fun to rediscover what new upgrade cards are working for them. And of course, just medium-based ships in general are fun to rediscover, like the U-Wings. Those 90-degree rotates are pretty cool there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I think we both really love about the game, but obviously, you know, with any new release here, we weren't expecting the game to be perfect, and there are some holdups we still have. But I think, in general, we're still feeling very positive about the game, even after having it in hand for a few months here to test around.
All right, Chris Banky Need asks, with the expansion of X-Wing to 7 factions now, are you planning to faction lock your collection, keep a couple of factions for play, or go all in and collect all 7? And I think this is a question that everyone's kind of been asking themselves. So I think that's a fun one for us to answer.
Yeah, I mean, we have in second edition the real opportunity here to really devote yourself to a faction. That's something you really honestly couldn't do in first edition just because of the overlap so much for upgrade cards across factions. It does look like Fantasy Flight is doing a pretty serious effort to enable players to just pick a faction, stick to it, and keep that up throughout the duration of the life of the game. Now, for us personally, I mean, honestly, as fans of X-Wing and miniatures and Star Wars, it's going to be hard for me not to just buy all these models, if only just to look at them and have them.
Right. I mean, at this point, you know, even if I don't play all the factions, I still have the models up in my display cases. And I mean, I already have the models for five of the teams. So, I mean, I'll still get the conversion kits for all five of those. And, you know, I at least want to try the two new factions. I'm especially interested in the Republic with those Jedi Starfighters. And, you know, I wouldn't really be too interested in the Separatists, but that Sith Infiltrator does also have me curious. So I'm going to at least try those two new factions. Definitely going to convert all of my old ships. And then I'm going to just kind of wait and see where the new releases go from there. You know, maybe if I don't enjoy all the factions, I'll just continue to collect maybe just Scum or probably at least a few. I like to mix it up at least casually.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly planning on collecting all the factions. Not to say that I'm going to play them all the time, but in first edition, I know a lot of people had factions they tended to favor back then. I didn't really. I'd switch around depending on what, you know, what the current metagame called for. And I'm excited to do that again, even if it means playing across seven factions. I like to have those options open there.
Yeah, you do tend to be a leaf in the meta wind.
Yeah, I like the opportunity to be able to adapt. And it is nice to try something new from time to time, where when you get, I got really used to Rebel synergy lists back in the day and formation flying. It was great to switch that up and try something different in like Imperial Aces. So I fully plan on collecting all the factions for the time being. Obviously, that could change in the future.
Well, and I do think that is a concern, you know, if you are playing only one faction, you know, maybe you pick up Empire right now because they're the strongest, but metas shift. And, you know, if you only have Imperial stuff and suddenly the Imperials are really struggling to deal with whatever the new meta threats are, it would be nice to at least have a second faction to look for different answers in.
All right, Alex Wabama asks, what do you expect to be the tournament format for lists moving forward? Also, what will it take to get Carson back to Minnesota? To answer the second part of the question first, I think we're going to probably have to grow a couple mountains somewhere and have some better skiing. I think that's going to be a big part of it, right, Carson?
Definitely. The Minnesota ski hills were just a little bit, actually a lot, way too short. You know, if you could convince all my family to move to Minnesota, that would help. I do have a big X-Wing family there, so that's a big plus for Minnesota. But right now I'm just kind of tired of moving, so not anytime soon, guys. But as far as the tournament format that we expect, I think that's a really tough question and one we would all like the answer to. So let's speculate a bit.
I mean, yeah, and we've speculated a fair bit. I think where it stands right now is obviously they were running the extended format at the Coruscant Invitational. I think that's just kind of by necessity right now. As much as I prefer a limited format, I think that the card pool is just not big enough and the complexity is just not there to have a really interesting metagame with only the second edition releases. Obviously, that will change as we see more material released over time. But I think right now they're sticking with extended just because it gives you a level of complexity that you expect to see at high level tournaments. They did tease a little bit at the Coruscant Invitational about a new format that's going to be kind of a curated, I think they called it hyperspace maybe, a curated format where there'll be cards maybe rotating in and out. And I would expect once we see a bigger card pool of second edition material that that would probably be the go-to format for most premier level events, if that's what we're talking about.
Right. I would expect, you know, a year or two down the road, once all the factions have had a little bit more balancing, that we do see a rotating format with not all of the ships that are available for the first three factions in extended. So narrower, where, you know, you have maybe 5 to 8 ship choices per faction and all seven factions available, and probably also rotating the unique upgrade cards. I think that would be a pretty interesting format. It would be accessible to newer players and still enticing enough for veteran players to devote time to. But I think we're going to have to deal with extended for a while now. Till we get there. Gustavo Arquila asks, what weapon or feature of first edition would you like to see brought back to second edition eventually?
Okay, well, I know what your answer is going to be, Carson. This one I have to think about a little bit. I want to say...
All right, well, do you want me to give my answer so you can think a little bit?
I mean, I read it earlier. I have a general idea. I'm going to go... It's hard for me to pick an exact mechanic. I want to say auto thrusters just because I depended on it so much, but I know that's not great for the game, especially the game they're building now. I really kind of liked the Ray Crew card. I thought that was one of the better later releases we saw in first edition. And obviously they've started to limit these kind of infinite mechanics. So whatever version we'd see, obviously Ray Crew card in first edition, people who don't know, you could at the end phase save a focus token onto the Ray Crew card. And then at the start of combat, you'd be able to add an evade token from Ray. So you could stockpile a bunch of focus tokens on the Ray Crew card, but only get them back one at a time. With things like the Moldy Crow title on the Hawk 290, now we've seen them limit those mechanics where you can only save so many tokens. But I'd still like to see a version like that where you can have a card where you can bank tokens, but you can't bring them all out at once. You can only bring them back one at a time. I think it gives you an interesting interplay with your opponent where when they know you can stockpile things, it kind of puts pressure on them to be a little bit more aggressive so that you don't have time to build up that stockpile. So that's probably a mechanic I'd like to see come back in some form. Doesn't have
I
to be on Ray Crew.
I agree that the gameplay in the early few turns with the Ray Crew was pretty interesting, kind of forcing quicker engagements. Obviously, the Ray Crew card, actually called Ray, will be a lot different because it'll probably provide force charges.
Right.
But, just that same mechanic, how many points do you think that Ray Crew card ability would be? Even if it's... Ooh. It'd probably still be capped at you can store 2 focus tokens, mm-hmm. But how many points do you think that would be?
You know, going off the line they've set with things like Perceptive Copilot getting you 2 focus tokens, and just knowing the value, how hard it is to get like focus and target lock in a round, and a card like this would enable you to do that. I'd expect you'd see it maybe in the gunnery slot, maybe in the crew slot, at or above 10 points, I think, hands down, even if there was a limit on it.
I'd guess it'd probably be around 14. I think it's a little bit more than Perceptive Copilot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I'd play it at 14 and be pretty happy with it. Okay, well, we all know I'm going to say Itani Mind Link, but hear me out. It's Itani Mind Link with Calculate tokens instead. So it's an elite pilot talent that replaces all instances of focus on your action bar with Calculate, and then when you calculate, you give the other ship with Itani Mind Link a Calculate token. And it's only limited to 2. So you can only have 2.
And the shared Calculate would be not sharing a Calculate action. They just get the token, so they could each take a Calculate action and then each pass a token.
Yeah. So your focus gets nerfed, but then you can share it with your team.
Right, and then if your synergy starts to break down, ships get destroyed, you start to get penalized for it. Because now you just get calculates instead of focuses. I think that's a good way to balance it. Affects kind of the more problematic areas of Itani Mind Link.
And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, having a lot of green tokens is good, but calculate tokens are still quite a bit worse than focus tokens. Especially if everyone's juking you.
Gloria Kim asks, if Tim and Carson play against each other, who wins? Now, I think we've actually got a decent amount of evidence. What'd you say?
Nothing.
Based on previous evidence, I've determined if it's a practice game or at like a kind of casual weeknight tournament, you will beat me every time. And if the game really kind of, quote unquote, matters at all at like a premier level event, I will probably table you because that seems to be the pattern.
I'm sure I'll get half on one ship. Well, yeah, and this is going to be kind of interesting going forward now for us personally, because we won't get to play any of those practice or casual games anymore. So if I just meet you at tournaments and you table me, we'll see how that works for our friendship moving forward.
That is true, but also I'm the one who knows how to edit a podcast, so I think I'll win out on the podcast front.
Yeah, probably. I'll just have to figure out how to beat you instead of learning how to edit a podcast. I think
that yeah, that's like probably the best route.
Gloria also said that she hopes this is answered on stream, and I hope so, only if I win. All right, Jacob Lair asks, could you guys do a segment on mat maintenance for new players about how to properly store and maintain your play mats?
I don't think one segment's enough. I think we should devote a full 4-part series to this. I think that's the only way we could really cover every area of mat maintenance, right?
Well, you know, I'm going to say I'm certainly not an expert on this, so we could do continuing a bit about how we improve and get better at storing our own playmats. I actually just bought a new playmat last week because one of my old ones was falling apart, and I let a bunch of children scribble over my other good one. That being said, you know, I think there is a lot of value to properly storing your playmats. You know, it was quite a big deal when these playmats first came out. It pretty dramatically changed the look and feel of the game. You know, suddenly you're actually playing on a star mat, and it makes the nice looking miniatures look a lot better than playing on your kitchen table.
I'm still holding out for the tile grid that was announced a long time ago that we never got released. They were going to release a box of star segment tiles, 1 foot by 1 foot, that you'd set up into a 3 foot by 3 foot play area. And I'm still hoping they're going to release that. I mean, we've never seen it. I haven't had news in a while, but I'm hoping it's going to come out soon.
Oh, man, that would suck. There's already enough set up for X-Wing. But, you know, these playmats are a big deal. And, you know, compared to everything else in X-Wing, they are one of the bigger investments, unless that you look at all the epic ships I have. But, you know, there's some pretty cheap solutions. You know, they come in a decent cardboard box. Those can hold up for a while.
Especially with some tape.
Yeah, I've taped mine up quite a few times. You really don't want them falling out while you're carrying them. That doesn't do good for your mat. You can buy some art travel tubes. So these are, you know, cylinder tubes that are hard plastic that can protect, that are used to protect art while traveling. And they work perfect for a playmat. And, you know, they come with nice slings so you can carry them over your shoulder while carrying all of your X-Wing stuff between game locations. So that really helps.
You'll be the coolest guy in the mall parking lot.
Absolutely.
I think beyond, you know, getting a better storage solution, I think the simplest thing is, like, what I learned with my first mat, which has got very wrinkly on one end, is just make sure you store them well. You know, make sure they're rolled up without any folds in them, and don't store them up on end. Make sure they're lying down, because eventually the weight will put little creases in them.
You know, as you say that, Tim, I'm looking at my mat stored vertically, and I'm just going to push them over.
Yeah, and I've heard you can get the wrinkles out. I haven't tried it myself, but, you know, do it at your own risk. People have said, you know, really low heat setting on an iron with no steam, and then have like a towel or something as a barrier. Obviously,
gosh,
do that.
I don't
at
even
your own
iron
risk.
My clothes.
But you know, there are ways to work it out. But yeah, the best way is to just store it well, even if you're just keeping it in the cardboard. Keep it lying down somewhere, or just in the trunk of your car, which is what I always do. Just so I always have it on hand. Because you never know where you need that 3x3 foot mat.
Oh, I mean, always. They're just so great.
And that concludes part one of our series on playmat storage. Stay tuned over the next several weeks as we continue to dive deeper and deeper into the playmat metagame. Next up, we have a question from Matt Stout. Matt asks, what do you think is the most underrated upgrade in second edition so far?
Yeah, and this is actually kind of tough because at this point, you know, if you asked me when it first came out, I'd have a lot of answers. At this point, I think people are finding a lot of the good upgrade cards, so I don't know if underrated is appropriate for a lot of them.
And yeah, and there are a lot of upgrade cards, but there's not like so many that any would really slip completely past everyone's radar. I think there are some that are values that are maybe better than they appear on the surface. For me, a big one is the outmaneuver talent, which amongst, we've seen a lot of the power level on the talent slot kind of go down from first edition to second edition. Cards that previously had pretty strong effects are more narrow in their focus. Things like Predator now have to be in the bullseye, same with Marksmanship. I think cards like Outmaneuver, which don't have those kind of limitations, even if they're a little bit more expensive than their cheaper counterparts, they still have a really strong effect and a really wide area of coverage. Outmaneuver, of course, you can when you're shooting at a ship and you're outside of its firing arc, they roll one fewer defense die when you're attacking. And there's no limit to that. It doesn't have to be in your bullseye. Just as long as you're not going to be shot at by them, you get to reduce their agility value, which is a really powerful effect because that's basically, in a way, adding a damage just because it's less likely that they're going to be able to cancel that damage out.
Right. I mean, outmaneuver was not a bad effect in first edition. It just competed with push the limit. But now your ships, you know, with linked actions have push limit built in. So you're free to take that outmaneuver effect and it does dramatically boost your offensive output. For me, my underrated upgrade card is advanced sensors. I've been finding more and more any ship I can put advanced sensors on has been a lot of fun to fly, and being able to boost and then do a, you know, K-turn or S-loop or Talon roll is a very powerful effect. And, you know, getting an action and then bumping is very great. You know, yeah, when you look at TIE defenders, it doesn't work well with their built-in ship ability that gives them their evade token, because it doesn't let you take any more actions, even free extra actions. But, you know, boosting and doing a 5K turn with Countess Riyadh is really awesome.
Well, and even just be able to do one of those turnaround maneuvers, a K-turn or a Signor's Loop or something, and still get a focus token, since it's so much more difficult in second edition to get those tokens when you're doing stressful maneuvers and that kind of stuff, it's really nice to just have that option there where, okay, I can turn around and still get a focus. That's going to be really important on my defense.
Right, and just making sure your maneuvers don't get blocked, I think, is huge.
Yeah, positioning is at a premium right now in second edition, so advanced sensors really helps with that.
All right, Matt Stout also wants to know, what does TCX stand for? He always assumed it was Tim Carson X-Wing. Is this correct?
It is correct now. So my version of the story is, when we first started, in the community, we'd often refer to the Twin Cities X-Wing community as TCX. And a lot of people still do. We obviously don't own the letters TCX. But now it's kind of changed because Carson's moved to Colorado. And honestly, I didn't even make the connection that TCX had our initials in it till an embarrassingly long amount of time after we started making the show.
Right. I mean, at the time, we were both living in the Twin Cities, and we wanted to be a bit more of a local-focused show. You know, it has since grown well beyond the Twin Cities. We have listeners from all over the world. So that doesn't quite apply. And I don't even live in the Twin Cities anymore. I just moved to Denver. So I guess Tim Carson X-Wing works, but at this point, I think it's also just kind of too late to change the name.
Yeah, it's our brand
and
now.
I think TCX has a nice feel.
People can confuse us with OCX, and then also we get called Radio Tex, which that's been an interesting one that's happened more than once, which I think is interesting. People assume we're from Texas, but
I'm now within driving distance, but still not quite Texas.
I will say, though, Tim Carson X-Wing, that does establish the proper name order. So you'll see anytime I do post the episode on social media, it always says things like Tim and Carson discuss yada, yada, yada. So the proper order is Tim first, then Carson, then X-Wing.
X-Wing third.
Andy Myers asks a speculation question. What are some dark side upgrades in reference to the Maul crew card you're expecting, hoping to see, and what would those effects be? So for a little background here, Maul is a scum crew card for 13 points currently with one force, and it reads, after you suffer damage, you may gain one stress token to recover one force charge. And it also has the text, you can add dark side upgrades. So the big question here is, what does that mean? There's obviously going to be a type of upgrade called a dark side upgrade. We don't know what they're going to be, what kind of ships they appear on, but we do need to speculate, obviously, because this is something we haven't talked about on the show yet.
Right. I mean, this is weird. Like, it's just a little bit of text that has no current meaning right now. We have force upgrade cards, but none of those are dark side. And, you know, whether or not this holds any ground, when you equip the Maul crew in the X-Wing app, it doesn't unlock any new upgrades, or you can't equip force upgrades. So we're not quite sure what that is referencing. I am hoping it's not some typo and that we're getting dark side upgrades, because that sounds really cool. And I think, you know, Maul being really the only force user in scum, I would really like to see some dark side upgrade options for scum. I have quite a long list of mechanics I'd like to see scum get. You know, if one could give you an evade token, I think that would be a pretty cool dark side one. But I think, you know, if it dealt out stress to opponents, that would feel very dark sidey. So some mechanic that lets you deal out stress, because Scum has a lot of stress matters cards. So I think that would be pretty cool to have more stress dealers. Regenning a shield sounds good while we're just dreaming here. But actually, I think if we're thinking about the Maul card, if it dealt damage to you for some cool effect, then that would trigger the Maul crew card for you to take a stress and get a force charge back, which could be interesting.
See, and that's what I'm thinking more. If we're talking about some sort of requirement or subtype on maybe, I don't know, force upgrades or something, when you're talking about dark side upgrades, I'm expecting these to be abilities that are generally like aggressive and offensive, either doing damage or dealing stress, leaning away from like support effects or synergy effects, really focusing on the aggression of the dark side. What I'd really like to see is abilities that are powerful, but then come at kind of a steep cost, because I feel like that'd be really thematic. Like, yes, you can do this really powerful effect, except you have to damage your own ship or stress your own ship or damage an ally. Something where you're like, you get a really big payoff, but there's a really big cost. I think that would be a cool mechanic to introduce in the game and really add some flavor, rather than this just being kind of a subtype of upgrade that only certain ships can use.
Okay, I've got it. Take a damage, get two shields. It's perfect. Just think, let that one sink in. All right, Wes Cargill has a long one here, so hang in. He asks, I am curious as to how the seven separate factions are going to fill out relative to each other. Obviously, the current three will be made up of re-releases of existing expansions. The Resistance and First Order faction will continue to have content added as the new films and other media are released. The Clone Army and Separatist factions seem like they will have a much smaller pool of resources to draw from. What are your thoughts, and do you think players will be satisfied with the release schedules?
Well, first of all, in reference to the release schedule, I've always been anticipating a very aggressive release schedule from Fantasy Flight. We're already seeing the launch, which was in September, and then we're seeing more conversion kits come out in November, new ships. So I'd expect them to be releasing new ships every couple months. At the height of second edition, there were a lot of releases, it seemed like, coming out very quickly. And I see no reason, especially now that they have seven factions to support, for them not to keep up a pretty decent clip of releasing new content.
Right. I mean, I was impressed at how deep they dove into the expanded universe to keep coming out with new ships for the first edition. You know, and they've brought in their perspectives now. They're looking farther back with the Clone Republic Army and the Separatist factions, which will give them, you know, even more ships to dive into and bring to the game. But if we're looking at a faction, playing that faction, having it feel like you have enough options, how many ships do you think you need? Well, how many ships come out before you feel like the Separatists are comparable in power level to Scum or the Rebels?
Well, I mean, that's a tricky question. I think it depends a lot on whatever the kind of main format people want to play is. But I think once you start to hit the range of like five very distinct ships, I think you could have a pretty good faction identity. I think that's really what it comes down to, is like you need to have enough of a sampling of different ship types to get an idea of what the themes of the faction are going to be. And I think once you hit five or maybe six ships, you'll really start to get a feel for what a faction is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that around five is when I think we can have good tournament play with a faction. I think three is a little too few. And, you know, I don't think anyone's really forcing Fantasy Flight to make these two new factions. So they must have. So I think that means that they think they can at least make 10 ships for these factions. Probably already gotten their approval from Disney, hopefully. So I think just making the choice to announce two more factions means that they're confident that they can make them big enough to be satisfying. Now, that being said, it will still be unbalanced as far as card pools for quite a while. And I think that goes back to the formats. You know, if Fantasy Flight can support multiple formats where, you know, we have the extended, where we can use, you know, all of our Rebel and Imperial options, but then also have a fun competitive format where we can play all seven factions and have them feel like they're on an even playing field, but still have that be deep enough where it is interesting to play. So they've got a tough challenge, but I hope they pull it off.
Michael Urbanowicz asks, which format do you guys prefer, extended or second edition? Is there a particular list you like for each? Also, did you guys ever announce the changes you were going to make for Patreon rewards? We'll cover the Patreon thing at the end here of this question. But when talking about the formats, for me, it comes down to, honestly, so if I'm playing a game like Magic or something, I like limited formats. I like smaller card pools that I can learn. And I think right now, the extended card pool, especially since it's going to keep growing, is a little larger than I'd like to see for a tournament setting, where like that's just things just going to become a monolith in a year or two, where there's just going to be so many cards. And I think it's more interesting to have that more narrow format that might rotate out. So not even second edition, whatever this hyperspace format is probably what I would prefer. But I like the more narrow card pool, which makes, to me, makes it more fun to prepare for tournaments, to really see what the limited set of options are and try and guess, okay, what are most people going to bring? What can I bring to counter that? What can I bring to play against that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have kind of the same opinions on how we feel about the formats. I like the concept of a narrow format, but I think that the second edition format is just too narrow for it to be interesting long term. I think it's fine right now, but you know, once we devote a competitive scene to it, you know, after a month, I think it's going to feel very stale, just because it's just too narrow. So I prefer the extended right now. Yes, it is a lot of cards, but I'd rather there be too many cards than not enough. But I think there is room for a very nice middle ground. And I think once we get a few more releases, get the other factions up to 5 to 6 ships, I think they would be in a pretty good place for a more narrow format. But whatever format I play, I hope it has a hawk in it. James Kreck asks, aside from your choice of co-host, what is your number one X-Wing related regret? You know, we're a few years in at this point. It's probably a little too late to change co-hosts. Although Tim's been trying, you know, we've had a few other people on the show.
We've been testing out guests on the show, and that may or may not mean a potential replacement for Carson. But for now, I'll settle.
All right. Well, my number one X-Wing regret, I have two. One is a narrow thing.
Your number one regret
is
that you have two regrets?
Exactly. Well, so one of them was... during the game thing, I think it was the 2016 Worlds, whichever one I did decent at. I was playing against someone from Evergreen Squadron Radio whose name escapes me, and it was a traumatic game, so that's why I don't remember your name.
It's a repressed memory.
I'm usually pretty good at that. But my Hawk's cloaking device broke right at the beginning of the first engagement, of course, and then it got wiped out. And I really needed that ship to block my Shadowcaster the next turn. And I kind of just went on tilt and kind of punted the rest of the game and just really did not play my best game at X-Wing because of some early variants didn't go my way. I got upset about that and it affected my gameplay. So I regret that because, you know, even if I had lost that game, but, you know, played it and got better MOV, I probably would have made that cut at Worlds because I was only 30 some points from the cut there. If I did not fold as big as I did there, I think I would have made the cut. But more broadly, my other big X-Wing regret is not playing competitive lists earlier. So for, a year or two, probably closer to 2 years, I really did not want to play meta squads. Whatever the best squad was, I did not want to play it. And I just tried to blaze my own trail, which was fun, but it meant that my tournament results were not as great. And, you know, I made that shift to play more competitive lists, and I've really enjoyed it. So I just wish I made that change earlier.
The biggest regret that pops into my mind, there's no contest in my mind, when I was playing against at the 2018 World Championship, so the last first edition World Championship, it was the day two of Swiss, the final round of Swiss, and I was playing against Will Hegwood, who's a multiple-time System Open champion, so an all-around excellent X-Wing player and a really nice guy. Playing him, he was flying Fairship Rebels, I had a couple Imperial Aces out there, and it was a really hard game for me, because that was a really hard matchup for me. We got down to a point where I had the Inquisitor coming up to his Ezra, and his other ships were out of position. I was down on points, And I moved into a position and I looked and I thought, well, I maybe have a shot, but if I barrel roll, I will definitely have a shot. And I really needed to take some points or I was not going to win that game at all. I had no chance. So I opted to barrel roll in and take the shot. And what I had forgotten about was that we had both been assigned harpoon conditions. And when I barrel rolled, it was a lot closer than I expected. So we were both in range one. So what ended up happening is we basically blew each other up. The harpoons killed the other ship. And suddenly I was left with still down on points and not really any way to get back there before time came. The reason it's my biggest regret is not because, like, had I not barrel rolled, I would have, like, won the game. But I ruined my only chance at winning the game by making a decision that I could have, had I just more carefully analyzed the situation, could have just definitely avoided and still probably gotten the shot I wanted.
I think your answer there speaks to just how complicated and convoluted first edition was getting at its end, that there was just so much stuff to keep track of, that it was, you know, very difficult to keep track of it all. That's a very mortal mistake, but unfortunately the consequences were high at the World Championships.
Yeah, I mean, it was still a great game. I don't regret the game, but I just remember that barrel roll, and I think it's going to haunt me the rest of my life.
I think now that you can fail barrel rolls, we probably have a lot more stories like that. All right, we got a final question here, two-parter from Robert Coleman, who asks, he's asking about the X-Wing app. What features would you like to see added to the Fantasy Flight X-Wing phone app? And which non-official web-based squad builders do you prefer until the official one is sufficiently improved?
Well, I think we've both been pretty set on, squad builder-wise, been pretty set on Launch Bay Next, because we both have iPhones currently. And that is a very clean, simple, easy-to-use app for X-Wing squad building. It's been very up-to-date, so I've really appreciated that that app's been available due to the kind of lackluster nature of the FFG one.
Yeah, I mean, right now my asks for the Fantasy Flight app are all pretty small. Just, I would really enjoy all of the ease of access features that it seems like everyone else who makes an X-Wing app has no problem including, you know, like the ability to make a duplicate copy of a ship when you're trying to see, you know, how many of certain generics with this loadout fit into a squad. It's really annoying to have to go through and add another TIE bomber and put another torpedo on it. So I think that would really improve my list building experience. I also really don't like their current sorting system on the app. I just get really annoyed and can never find A-Wings because it's alphabetical, but they have all of their little letters and numbers in front for the alphabetization. I just assume A-Wings should be at the top of the list. Can never find them, which is why I haven't played A-Wings yet. It's all the app's fault. But I think you have some bigger asks.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there are a lot of features, like little things about the app that I think need to be changed in the near future. But thinking big picture, like assuming they get all those ease of use features installed, I would really like to see app integration into an updated tournament software, like an official tournament software from Fantasy Flight that's official, up to date, and good for not just X-Wing, all their organized play games, because I'd like to get beyond the point where we need to bring out, you know, printed squad lists and check those all by hand. It would be really great if you had, you know, a URL you could submit lists to, or some way to integrate the app into a tournament so that you can verify digitally that all the lists are valid. You can track player standings and pairings electronically.
Right. I mean, it's a terrible waste of paper to print out all those squad lists and they just get thrown away. It's, you know, 2018, we should be able to do this digitally. And I think, you know, with the announcement of there being an app with second edition, these were the kind of expectations that everyone had. You know, how is this going to work with organized play? And, you know, right now we've seen nothing. But I really hope down the road that it is included.
Well, I know with the Fantasy Flight launching their Keyforge card game coming up, they've teased a lot of stuff about app integration and like a new digital way to use a digital platform for all their organized play stuff. So I think if they're doing it in that game, I think they should really definitely bring that to the X-Wing game, which is also a huge game for them. And we had several people asking about the update to Patreon. We talked about this a little bit, I think, a month ago. I apologize for not getting more information out quicker. It's a hectic life enough just getting the podcast out there. But we are in the process of updating all the rewards for our Patreon subscribers. We're getting rid of the old reward tiers. So unfortunately, those are no longer accessible. The original three sets of target logs and the range one ruler. So if you have those are exclusive to you. For anyone who's been supporting us for more than one of those individual tiers, so say you supported us for about 8 months, we are sending you the 12-month reward just so that the money you put forward was not wasted. So you will get, anyone who is supporting us 7 to 11 months gets the 12-month reward. 4 to 5 months will get the 6 month, etc. I've actually already sent most of those out. We're just waiting on another shipment of the third set of target locks before those will go out.
All right, and they're still in production, so we haven't really posted any announcement about them yet. But we have decided on our first new set of patron rewards. So the first prize for our patron members is going to be a one straight template. This is going to be one of your most useful tools for second edition. It's going to have all the markings so that you can do the proper new barrel rolls. I saw a lot of people using their old template systems, but using the cardboard one straight template because they needed it for the barrel rolls. So I think this is going to be a really useful tool, and I think it's going to look really good too.
Yeah, I mean, even if you don't own a set of acrylic templates, I think having the one straight template, since that's such an important part of the game for boosts or for barrel rolls, that's a nice thing to have as an acrylic. So you're going to have that beautiful mirrored red acrylic already painted, Radio TCX style. We're not quite ready to announce what the other rewards in the future will be, but we do have a focus here. Now that we have a new edition of the game, we really want to highlight those elements that are new to the game. So if you're thinking about, well, what things do we have in second edition that we didn't have in first edition, the rewards will likely be based on those things.
Yeah, I mean, and the overall theme is we do want to continue to support those who are supporting us. So we want these patron rewards to be something you will want to use during the game. And hopefully we come up with other cool ways to make it a worthwhile endeavor, like this podcast episode, letting you ask your questions and have them being answered on the show.
Yeah, and we plan to do this as a regular thing, so stay tuned every month or so for that post to go up on the Patreon page, and we'll get some more questions from you. This is a really fun thing to do. We do enjoy answering your questions, so keep sending them at us.
And thank you for the questions. They really were a lot of fun to answer. All right, and I just want to say that I'm sorry I missed the show last week, and I'm really glad that Kevin was able to step in, provide us some coverage of the Coruscant Invitational, and cover for me. Thank you, Kevin. I was unfortunately at my grandmother's funeral, which I bring up to acknowledge her as one of my main influences that brings me to record a gaming podcast on a weekly basis. Patricia Messner was an amazing bridge player who spent her whole life studying and proving her skill at one game. And she passed this love for games onto her grandchildren. And while I'm an amateur bridge player at best, I put the same level of dedication into X-Wing. And this podcast serves as a way for us all to study and improve our play in the game that we enjoy. So thank you for listening.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoyed the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly or be able to ask your questions on an episode like this in the future, please go on to patreon.com/RadioTCX. and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us. And thank you to all of our current patron supporters.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.